Congratulations. You are being rescued. Please do not resist.
Hello and welcome to episode 144 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies, or in this case, just one movie. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here is my lone co-host this week. It's Angie Hahn.
Hello.
So we lost Christy, and it's sad because this is our episode.
She's alive, Perry.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't mean it like that, guys. Relax. Christy couldn't be here on the podcast tonight. But she'll be back next week. All right. So our lone movie that we're talking about this week is Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And here is the IMDb synopsis. The Rebellion makes a risky move to steal the plans for the Death Star, setting up the epic saga to follow. Hey, IMDb, you nailed it. Congratulations. So, briefly, before I get into the five bajillion things I want to discuss, I loved this movie. This was basically everything that I hoped Rogue One would be and more. Because when they first announced the movie and it started to come together, all we kept hearing was, oh, it's a war movie. It's going to be a Star Wars war movie. And I got so excited about that. I really wanted something that, you know, felt a little different, gritty and grounded and like a true war story. However, then we had all that reshoot nonsense where it sounded a lot like they were pulling back in that respect. That did not happen. This is a Star Wars war movie, and that is a big part of the reason I love it. It feels like a Star Wars movie. It feels like a Gareth Edwards movie, and I think that combination worked especially well.
I liked it with reservations. I agree that it's a war movie. Like, Star Wars has always been technically, I guess they're technically all war movies. War is right there in the title, but this is the first one that really does feel like, you know, like something closer to a World War II movie or a Vietnam movie or something like that. And I thought that was really exciting. I love that the franchise is taking risks and putting out a movie like this that feels in a lot of ways very different. At the same time, I agree with you. I think it does a pretty good job of still feeling like you're in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. And that has to have been a really, really tricky balance to pull off. And I think that part of it works really well. But the main reservation I had about this movie is that I think the character work is so, like, thin. I think it's so shoddy. I think they really undermine their own emotional impact by not spending enough time with the characters. I mean, there were other things I liked and disliked about it, but those are the two main things for me, is that I liked what it represented, I liked what it tried to do, I thought it was very good as a war movie, it looks good, it sounds good, and the actors are all great. I just wish they had more, like, meatier material to work with.
I have two questions for you. First, did you finish Catalyst?
I did finish Catalyst, okay. And it's a good fucking thing I did,
yeah.
Because, again, like, I watched the movie, and first of all, I didn't realize that Catalyst is such a direct prequel to this movie. Like, I thought it was just going to be, like, background info,
no.
But no, the ending of Catalyst really just leads into this movie. So that's fine, but then, like, you know, so here's one thing. After the movie, I was talking to some of my other friends who had seen the movie. I think you were in the Facebook chat where we were talking about it too. And then, like, I was like having to explain Catalyst to people, mm-hmm. because when you watch the movie, the relationships, even that relationship, which is mainly between, like, Galen, the Mads Mikkelsen character, and Krennic, the Ben Mendelsohn character, like, even that relationship doesn't really read as anything.
Yeah.
It's like such a nothing.
That's my big question. And having both read Catalyst, it's, you know, it's impossible for either of us to assess this movie from the perspective of someone who didn't have all that backstory, but I suppose that if someone went into Rogue One without having read Catalyst, it doesn't seem like there's any possible way for them to have gotten as much out of the movie as I did.
I would agree with that, and I don't think it's even just so to me, it feels like a movie that is, it almost feels like every single character should have their own Catalyst-style prequel, which is, like, you know, that would be kind of an interesting thing to do,
Which characters did you have the biggest problems with in this respect?
I thought that the character played by Riz Ahmed, who is an actor I love, and
yeah.
I was so excited to see him in this. I thought he was completely wasted. Bodhi, he has so little to do, and it's disappointing because this is the thing that frustrated me so much about how I just want to clarify, first of all, like, the reason that I was so frustrated is because I think this movie has so much going for it that it's disappointing to me that it wasn't even better. But the thing that about the characters is, I'm like, you had all the ingredients there for to make really exciting characters. You have incredible actors who are giving, like, you know, giving their all into these performances. They're doing a lot of the heavy lifting. You have, like, rich backstories. Because whenever you read, whenever, like, they talk about them or, like, talk about the concepts behind their characters, like, I was always like, ooh, that sounds so interesting. And then they just fail to kind of, like, cohere in any substantial way. Like, I mean, Bodhi is a really good example because he's, like, you know, he's an Imperial pilot who decided to switch sides. I'm like, oh, I want to know about that. I want to know, like, how did someone get into this life and then what made him decide to go? And he kind of refers to it in dialogue, but that's, like, all you really get. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't really get to see his emotional arc with that or anything. And as a result, like, Riz Ahmed is trying his best. He's making the most out of the material, but he just has nothing to do.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty fair point. I will say, though, that the two characters that stood out to me amongst the rebel group were Jin, who I definitely had a little added amount of backstory on thanks to Catalyst, but I thought her journey in the movie was pretty well done. But I think one of the characters that had the best arc was probably Cassian, because, you know...
I like Cassian a lot, too.
We get a pretty rough and tough introduction to him where it shows what kind of person he is, and then every step of the way throughout this entire narrative, you see him changing, and it's like piece by piece. It's not like one thing happens and he turns into a different person. There's little steps along the way that kind of change his mind and change how he goes about doing things, and that was probably one of the more interesting character progressions for me. One thing I was a little disappointed in, I think it worked well enough for me, again, because I read Catalyst, but I wanted a little more from Galen and Krennic. I think maybe this is probably the one downside to having read the book, is the book is so much about their relationship and why and how Krennic drives Galen to do certain things and, you know, leave behind his morals and why Galen has to make certain decisions for that reason. And there, Galen in particular is a very minimal part of this movie. He's not in much of it. And Krennic, I did enjoy Krennic quite a bit. I think Ben Mendelsohn doesn't even have to say much. He does have this presence, but, you know, I hate to keep bringing up the book, but there's so many things that Krennic does in this movie that I don't know if they would register as strongly with someone who didn't get that whole backstory. And, you know, since the day I picked up Catalyst, I kept reading it, and I would say to people as I read it, you know, like, this is a great book. This is really helpful backstory. I'm so glad I'm reading it right now. And then I would go and watch a trailer or some clips or whatever was out there and say, but you know what? I think it looks like you can be able to enjoy the movie without it. Having seen the movie and read the book, I don't think I could recommend reading the book enough. And again, it's impossible for me to detach myself from the source material and truly judge whether or not someone can enjoy this movie without having read the book. I suspect that you can, but even beyond Catalyst, Rogue One is kind of, we keep referring to it in the office as like inside baseball for Star Wars. It's, if you're a real big fan that knows all the little things from Eps 4, 5, and 6, well, not 4, 5, and 6, just 4, like, you're going to see things, and Rebels, too. I mean, there's a lot of Easter eggs in this movie that won't be as satisfying and won't register and will take away so many of the fun, intricate little details they threw in, unless you really know Star Wars. Another perfect example, actually, is I keep using the example of my mom. My mom's not the biggest Star Wars fan. She's seen all the movies once kind of thing. And when Force Awakens came out, I said, Mom, you got to go see this movie. I think you're going to like it. She's like, no, I'm not a big Star Wars fan. I don't want to. I said, we're going to go see it. You're going to like it. She came out and she liked it. And I was freaking thrilled. I could not make the same recommendation for her with Rogue One.
Okay, so the one way that I have described it to people is it's a little bit like if you watch The Avengers, but you had not seen Iron Man, you had not seen Iron Man 2 and the Hulk and Captain America and Thor, like, you know, like, I don't know if that's like a perfect analogy because I think Avengers probably works better by itself, but it does kind of feel like you're getting it feels like we're supposed to already know these characters or something. Like, I agree with you that Catalyst is, like, a really great resource, but it kind of then feels like this is a movie where you have to do your homework to get the most out of it or to even have, like, a really satisfying experience. And I don't think that that's what they were going for. Like, to me, the ideal would be a movie that you can enjoy by itself without having read anything else, and then be able to come out of the movie and be like, oh, but I want to know more about these characters. Yeah. I'm so glad that there's comics and video games and, like, novels about them. I want to, like, go explore all of them. Whereas the way that I think we're both talking about it, it kind of sounds like we're like, I'm glad I did my homework before I watched this movie. Otherwise, a lot of it wouldn't really register to me.
That was the cool thing about pairing. I don't know if you read Bloodline, but that's the cool thing about pairing the events of Force Awakens at Bloodline is Bloodline's very much about Leia and how she came to the position that we see her in Force Awakens. And it's one of those things where you could see and love Force Awakens to death and then read the book after. And, you know, it'll obviously enhance her character for you, but your enjoyment of Force Awakens is no way whatsoever reliant on you reading Bloodline.
Exactly. I haven't read it, and yet I didn't feel like I was missing a giant chunk of her story, whereas in Rogue One, I do. I feel like we spent a lot of time complaining about it, but we should wrap up the non-spoiler part so we can go into spoilers. So before we go, I do want to say, like, as much as I have these complaints about it, as much as I think it has some really big flaws, basically all the stuff we just said, like, I mean, I love what this represents for the Star Wars universe. I love that it's, like, this, like, bold standalone story. I really hope that that we get more stories like this, not necessarily war stories, but just stories that are set in the Star Wars universe, but can kind of be their own thing that's not just connected to the Skywalkers. I love that this is a story about, like, the people that don't get any glory, but are fighting in the trenches and, like, doing all the dirty work. Like, that delighted me. I was so happy about that. And Gareth Edwards has such a great sense of scale. I thought the action in this was gorgeous. I thought you really did get a sense of, like, what the stakes were and, like, what's going on and how giant and full of possibility this universe is. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's like I said at the beginning of the review, I liked it with reservations. And I think that if you're a Star Wars fan, obviously you need to see it. If you're someone who's just kind of like, eh, then I mean, you can kind of wait and see.
I am talking right now purely from a personal standpoint. I loved this movie, like, without any reservations whatsoever. I was just freaking thrilled the entire time I was watching this. I think Gareth Edwards did an incredible job. You were just talking about the action. The first person X-Wing flying stuff looked incredible. This has, like, one of the best space battles I've ever seen. The ground combat is fantastic. And, you know, the way they wrap this into the events of Episode 4 is pure freaking genius. I loved it. I was freaking out in the third act of this movie. And without giving you any spoilers, I'm going to wrap my little, this little mini wrap-up review with one freaking word / name, and it's Vader. They do Vader right.
They make him deliver a pun, Perry.
Well, I don't care. I don't care about puns. I got more from Vader than I ever could have hoped for. So there you go. Right. I'm pretty sure those are two positive recommendations. I also see Roger. I think that's a sign we should move into spoilers. All right, so this is going to be the spoiler section of our Rogue One review. If you do not want to hear any spoilers, you turn this off now. Go see the movie and come back later. We are going to go nuts spoiling every freaking detail of this movie. This is your warning. Tune out. Angie, do you want to start it off?
Yes. Okay. So you kind of wrapped up by talking about the way that this movie goes into A New Hope. By the way, if you heard the spoiler warning, you're still listening, that was your cue to fucking leave, because we were about to spoil the shit out of the ending. So basically, at the end of the movie, like, you know, there's a big war. They accomplish the mission that they set out to accomplish, but everyone dies. And then you kind of see, like, how the message that they got out gets passed down and eventually ends up with Leia, and there's a cameo from Leia, and everyone in my theater was so, like, not everyone, but most people, it sounded like, were, like, really, like, oh my god, like, they were giddy with excitement that it, like, you know, tied so neatly into New Hope. They were happy to see, like, all that shit, to see, like, how it happened, like, because it literally ends, like, in the beginning moments of A New Hope. I, however, thought that tonal shift was really jarring. ending, because to me, it's a really sad movie. Like, I've been following these characters for the whole... I didn't, like, hate it, but to me, this was my experience. I'd been following these characters for the whole movie. They do accomplish what they set out to do, but to me, it was so sad. Like, I was kind of, like, the last time that you see Jin and Cassian, they're, like, on the beach, they're waiting for the end of the world. It reminded me, actually, of Lars von Trier's Melancholia, which was not...
Oh, all I could picture reference. Was Deep Impact, when Taya Leone's hugging her father and the big wave is coming.
But like that's what I mean. Like it's a really like kind of bittersweet, very sad, tragic moment, especially because you know that these people are not going to be remembered. They're never referenced again, not in A New Hope, not in like the, you know, 5 or 6 or 7. So to me it was sad, and I was still kind of processing it, and then, you know, then things get a little dark and like whatever. But then like while I was still kind of, I guess, in my grieving process for these fictional characters, suddenly like the tone shifts, so like, and then we're going to end up on a high note. And I was just like, at the end of it, I was kind of like, still kind of like, I watched it with my friend Rebecca. She was like super, super excited. She was practically dancing in her seat, but I was kind of just sitting there like, I'm still kind of sad about what happened. And it's weird to me that then it just becomes like so celebratory.
I didn't view it as a tonal shift whatsoever. And I hear much of the changes that were made to this movie with the reshoots were done to the third act. And if what I hear is true, it's what we get is a more bittersweet ending than what we would have gotten before, which seemed very bleak to me. But I think it ended the way it needed to. I think bittersweet is the perfect way for this to have gone out because, you know, going into this, I mean, you had to have had the understanding that these characters were not making it out alive. Just like you said, no one ever references them again. They had
it's not
to,
that I was surprised they all they had died. To die.
They all had to die, and I think the movie did it so well that, you know, not only do Jin and Cassian and the rest of the group die by the power of the weapon they've been trying to stop, but then you have someone like Krennic who's been fighting for it and championing this thing and wanted to be in control and lead this, and he's killed by it too. I thought it was just so incredibly well done, and I found the shift to Vader and the events of Episode 4 very, very natural. And so we basically got the two Vader scenes in this movie, two drastically different Vader scenes. I thought the conversation with Krennic was pretty good. That's not, but then, you know, you get the second scene and you completely forget about that scene because watching him just mow down people in that ship is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. I never, ever thought we'd see Vader light his lightsaber in this, let alone light his lightsaber, slash all these people, use the fucking force, and slam people against the ceiling. I was at the edge of my seat, grinning, terrified, everything by the end of that movie. As they're passing the plans along, it was so well done to me.
It's not that I didn't think that they were going to die. If you had asked me, like, any of these people going to make it alive, I'd be like, probably not most of them. So I wasn't surprised that they died. But to me, I mean, to tie it into New Hope so definitively, to me, robs the story a little bit of its power because this is a story that's supposed to be about the background grunts. And then it like, and then at the ending kind of repositions it as, don't forget, this is actually just a prequel to the more exciting shit that happens later. So I didn't really like
that. But the cool thing about that is that now, because like I rewatched Episode 4 before I saw Rogue One, and I also rewatched it after I saw Rogue One, and now all of the events at the beginning of Episode 4 in particular, I can't watch that without thinking of Jin and Cassie and all those people who died to get the plans in their hands.
Sure, but I'm just saying that, like, for me personally, and this is a personal preference, I understand that a lot of people, I think more people agree with you, but to me, as a personal preference, I would have preferred to just see this be their story all the way through the end, instead of being like, this is their story, until it's not, until it's actually secretly just background information for New Hope. But yeah. I mean, you know, well, agree to disagree.
No, yeah, I'll agree to disagree, but one more point about this is just that, you know, that was almost kind of the point of it all. It's that these people so selflessly sacrificed themselves to try to put a stop to this thing. So
I would have liked to see them have their moment of glory all the way through. That's all.
Yeah. All right. I'll leave it at that.
I wanted to talk about a certain CG character and ask you what you thought of it. What did you want to talk about?
I thought Tarkin looked excellent. And I'm a big fan of that character, too. Yet again, the result of reading another book, the Tarkin book is fantastic. And I love Tarkin's relationship with Krennic in Catalyst as well. I think that that visual effect trick looked fantastic for the most part, but both him and Leia had the same problem, and it's that the eyes aren't right. And she looked a little cross-eyed, but even without the cross-eyed part, it's like when you create something like that, it's almost like you can't create like the real human emotion that exists when someone, like a human being, is looking at you. They both came across to me like they had somewhat dead eyes. But the rest of Tarkin in particular looked so spot on that I was fine with it.
I like Tarkin as a character. I've not read the book, but I just like him from the original trilogy. He's one of my favorite, like, supporting, like, smaller characters. So I was, you know, so in that sense, like, yay, the animation looked like, it's very cutting edge, but at the same time, like, I couldn't stop noticing the thing you said. Like, it's as you said, it's right around the eyes. Everything else kind of looks passable. Like, I wouldn't really have picked up on it. But then you look at the eyes and you're like, something about the eyes doesn't look right. It looks animated. And then, like, the more you focus on his eyes, which, like, when you're watching an actor perform, a lot of times you're looking at their eyes because that's just what humans are used to looking at. And the more I would, like, look at his eyes, the more he would look like a cartoon to me. So then, like, I mean, I know that this isn't the first movie that's kind of tried to resurrect someone via CG. You know, Fury 7 was an example of when they had to do that with Paul Walker. But in that case, they also kind of, you know, like, gave themselves some leeway by making sure that you would not have to look at him for extended periods of time in close-up. I don't know why in Rogue One they thought that, like, people wouldn't notice or something. But yeah, to me, it was kind of distracting. I wish that they had just cast a different actor who kind of looked like him or something, because
How could they do that though? I think, you know, actually, probably a good way to assess what they did with Tarkin is the fact that had they cast another actor completely, except for the fact that their Mon Mothma happened to look identical to the original, like, I think that was just kind of lucky casting that they found someone that looked so much like her. But with Tarkin, if Tarkin had looked any different, had looked like another actor, I think that would have been more distracting to me than this little eye thing I'm complaining about, you know?
I don't know. I guess it's a, I mean, it's hard to say what, you know, whether, how well it would have worked, because we're speaking very theoretically. We don't know what that performance would have been like or what that non-existent actor would have looked like. But to me, I think that it would have just, and like when I was watching that, like, I couldn't help thinking about how just, like, weird it is. Like, this actor has died, but someone has digitally resurrected him without asking his permission they could just put him in another movie. Like, to me, that all that stuff was really distracting, and I would have preferred if they just kind of accepted the fact that Peter Cushing has died and been like, look, we're going to recast someone. It's going to look kind of like him, but, like, not completely, but please just bear with us. Like, I would have been like, okay, that happened. Like, to me, that was kind of weird. Have you ever seen the movie The Congress?
Yeah, I did see The Congress. I did not like The Congress.
This is literally what happens in The Congress, is, like, they take an actor's likeness and then kind of digitally resurrect them.
Now I'm mildly more disturbed by all this.
But yeah, so the two movies that came to mind besides Star Wars for me while I was watching this were Melancholia by Lars von Trier and The Congress, apparently.
Of all things. All right, we should probably wrap this up. Before we do, I want to ask you, who do you think my favorite character was in this entire film?
I feel like it's a trick question because we haven't even mentioned K2SO, and if you liked him that much, you would... Really?
I loved K2SO.
Okay, good.
Do you know what I did? You know what I did the day after I saw the movie? I went and I bought a K2SO pop because he's my new favorite thing. I thought he was hilarious. He's like Drax, but for Star Wars. I love everything he did.
Like Drax, but for Star Wars is accurate. He's a comic relief, but in a way that I think actually does suit the otherwise very serious and gritty tone of the film. Like, my favorite K2SO moment is when, like, you know, like, they've all, like, had this, like, rousing speech, and then K2SO, like, goes to Jin, and he's like, I'll be there for you. And then she's like, oh, thank you. And he's like, Cassian said I had to.
I thought that was hilarious. I thought almost everything that K2SO did was hilarious. And then towards the end, when he actually does genuinely warm up to her, I found that really touching. And then when he sacrifices himself, I mean,
I also really, really quick, because I know we have to wrap up, but we have not mentioned Baze and Chirrut, and I thought they were delightful. Oh, yeah.
That Baze had a little more screen time, but I think their bond worked really well. I also wish Baze got a better ending. That was actually, you know what, that was probably the one moment to me that felt like almost like an afterthought or a potential element that came from the reshoots, his death, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that felt like, oh, we need to give Baze his final moment, and that was it, you know?
Yeah, like, they kind of seem like they're setting him up for this really big, grand death, and then he just kind of, like, dies. And yeah. You're like, oh, okay.
It was a little
anxious. And, like, but I liked Donnie Yen so much. His, like, yeah, he's an action great star for a fucking reason. He is great in movement, but he's also just really likable and watchable when he's just, like, sitting there. Yeah. And then, like, to have their bond, I think, did a lot of... Because we've been talking about how a lot of the characters, for various reasons, were a little hard to connect to, but because they're clearly such good friends, I thought that bond did a lot to make me warm up to them really quickly. So yeah. I did like them. I didn't want to leave them out.
Glad you brought them up. All right, so yes. With that, I guess we should wrap this up. You probably heard it before, but pretty much the two of us both recommend this movie. Maybe I'm a little more enthusiastic than you. I really loved this. We were actually, maybe we should wrap it by, I don't know if you feel comfortable ranking, but we were talking about ranking Star Wars movies before we started recording, and for me, I think I put this on the same level as The Force Awakens. I liked them both the same amount, but for two completely different reasons, because they are two completely different movies.
Okay, but how, like, where does Force Awakens compare to the original trilogy for you? I'm going to assume the prequels are your bottom.
I think I'll always, like, going from top to bottom. So, like, episode 4 is always, it's my all-time favorite. I think Empire is a fantastic film, too, but it's something about, you know, the start of it all that is extra special to me. So, I think I got to go 4, 5, 6... And then just barely behind 6 would be 7 and Rogue One.
Okay, so my ranking's actually not that different from yours, because New Hope is also my favorite, and then Empire. And then I think that I actually like Force Awakens, and then 6, and then Rogue One.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's actually not that different. So yeah, Force Awakens is wedged in the middle of the original trilogy. This is below, for me, the trilogy and Force Awakens, but... I mean, we both agreed that the prequels are the bottom three, right?
Well, like, fuck yeah. I don't completely diss the prequels. I know they're not as good as the other ones, but I watch them often and kind of enjoy them for all their flaws, if that makes any sense at all.
Sure.
I just like existing in the Star Wars universe, no matter where I am or what I'm watching or reading. All right. So that's it. That's a wrap. On episode 144 of Popcorn and Prosecco, our Rogue One review. You guys know where to find us. It is on iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, and comment. You could also check our website out, popcornprosecco.com. Please like us on Facebook. We also have Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco, and then you can find both of us all over the internet. Angie, do you want to take it for yourself and Christy, because you're such an expert?
Oh, sure. So you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com. And you can find Christy on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko, and she writes all over the web, but you can find
her career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Yep.
Boom. All right, and you guys can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. I write for Collider.com, and I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Well, now there's a 35% chance of
failure. I don't want to know. Thank you.
I understand.